This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowane, sitting in for Terry Gross. For many years, Helen Suzman was the lone liberal voice in the South African parliament. A vocal and passionate critic of apartheid, she sparred with conservative members of the all-white government during her 36-year tenure. She fought for racial equality, pushed for the investigation into the death of Stephen Biko and other black activists, visited Nelson Mandela in prison, and worked to bring about judicial reform. Helen Suzman retired in 1989, just before then-President F.W. de Klerk began to dismantle South Africa's system of racial segregation. Apartheid officially ended several years later, when in 1994, the country held its first truly democratic election, making Nelson Mandela president. Helen Suzman has had a busy retirement and is a member of South Africa's Human Rights Commission. She was twice nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, has received numerous honorary degrees, and many awards. She is visiting the States to receive another award, the Jules Cohen Memorial Award of the Philadelphia Jewish Community Relations Council. Helen Suzman joins us to reflect on South Africa today. I asked her how her life has changed since the end of apartheid.
Well, I suppose really just with a sense of relief that I don't have to sort of battle away every day in Parliament to oppose the laws that I thought were so restrictive, and to watch with really disgust at some of the things that were going on in the detention trials and so on. I mean, that's gone. But my own life hasn't changed enormously. I've always had friends among black, coloured and Asian people, Indian people. And I perhaps have more opportunities now of meeting with them than I had before. But my own life was always a privileged, white, middle-class type of life, you know, living in a good suburb, going to a good school, being able to send my children to a good school and to university and so on. So from that point of view, it hasn't changed enormously.
Are there black families now living in your neighborhood?
Oh, yes, there are. There are. Indeed, I was the Member of Parliament for Houghton, which was what Americans would call a silk stocking district. And Nelson Mandela now lives in Houghton. So my one regret at not being in Parliament is that I can't represent him.
How would you evaluate his presidency? And obviously came to power under extraordinary circumstances,
yes.
Very high expectations. Has he been able to deliver?
I think, yes, up to a point, not entirely, because, you know, some people are very are disappointed that the government, I'm not going to put it all down to Nelson Mandela, because there is a government in power which hasn't cracked down sufficiently hard on corruption and nepotism and inefficiency. I mean, that they could have done immediately. You can't expect them to reverse the economic situation overnight. They haven't been able to fulfill their pre-election promises, which didn't surprise me because I think they were very ambitious indeed. But, I mean, what has happened, of course, is his own personal appeal throughout the world. I mean, he must be the most sought-after president, head of state in the whole world today. And that has given South Africa considerable status. And wherever he goes, you know, there is this tremendously enthusiastic welcome for him. And from that point of view, he's done very well for South Africa. He disappointed quite a lot of people in and out of South Africa with his final speech that he gave when he retired as the president of the African National Congress last December, I think it was. Yes, December. And he made a speech which was atypical, really, of Nelson Mandela, in which he castigated the opposition parties for criticizing the government, and he was very hard on the media, generally speaking, almost inferred they were in a sort of plot to unseat the government. And that of course, upset quite. And also he went for the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, many of whom have been doing a great job during the apartheid years in opposing apartheid measures. And he was very tough on all of those three categories.
This was a speech he gave this past December, as you said, criticizing whites, it sounds like, for their complacency,
yeah,
believing that by giving up political power, they could keep their economic privilege.
Yes.
What was he saying that, you think, for the world to hear? Was he saying that for members of his own political party, a message for whites as well?
Well, I think he was largely saying it with his eye to the general election, which is forthcoming next year. And he was talking then as the head of a political party which was determined not only to maintain its powerful position, but even to increase it. And he knows there's a lot of dissatisfaction among millions of black people because their economic situation has not really changed for the better as far as they are concerned. They're still, as I say, living in rotten camps, squatter camps, and they haven't got jobs, and generally speaking, their standard of living hasn't improved very much. So I think he was trying to give them a boost. At the same time, he was wrapping the white population over the knuckles for perhaps not doing more to speed up economic transformation.
Do you think there's some truth to that statement?
Yes, something. There is some of it, of course. I mean, you can't transform or revolutionize the whole economy in 4 years. It's just not possible. But we could probably have made greater strides towards improving the situation for black people. But, you know, it's all a question of investment, and that relies, as you know, on confidence. And there hasn't been a great deal of confidence, mainly, I think, because the crime and violence has escalated, and people are a bit nervous of expanding their economic interests, especially from overseas.
We're speaking today with Helen Sussman, and she was a member of the South African Parliament from the early 1950s until 1989, and a longtime critic of apartheid. You were a critic of sanctions during the apartheid era, saying that they hurt black South Africans harder than those in power. In what way did you see sanctions hurting the majority of South Africans?
Well, I mean, the point is that we lost our export markets in those particular occupations which were largely operated by black workers. I'm talking about agricultural products, and I'm talking about mineral products. I mean, those were the two biggest employers of black people, and, of course, our industrial products. The workers lost their jobs when the markets closed down. I mean, people don't go on producing if they can't sell their goods. So when we lost our export markets in agriculture, people in the sugar industry, people in other agricultural products like wine and fruit, they were laid off. And in South Africa, we don't have a very robust welfare system to help unemployed people. There's no dole, there are no food stamps, and you only get unemployment insurance if you happen to belong to an unemployment insurance company, and that really only applied to the semi-skilled and skilled workers. So people in mining and agriculture and industry who lost their jobs were pretty well left high and dry. And that is why I felt that sanctions were very bad. I also felt that once black trade unions had been given the power to strike and were recognized in law, which came about at the end of the 1970s, that they would be able to expedite the end of apartheid with their power structure. And one thing about strikes, you can call them on and you can call them off. It's not so easy to regain your export markets once they've gone. So that was really, it was an economic argument really more than anything else. And I have to admit, which I do and have done, that economic sanctions certainly expedited the end of apartheid, but at very considerable cost. I put it once in an article that seemed to me that it was curing the disease but killing the patient. And, you know, that's really what I felt about it. And now I'm very amused to see people using the same argument against sanctions on Cuba and Iraq.
Well, I wonder, since the end of apartheid, whether you think foreign countries have done enough to help South Africa get back on its feet economically.
Well, we have had reinvestment of companies which sold their franchises, for instance, I might say at fire sale prices. They've been bought back and they're now operating again. And we have had more companies. I think there's something like an additional 500 American companies that have reinvested. But we need far more than that to take up the slack in unemployment. And what we desperately need now is investment capital from abroad, because we don't have enough ourselves, especially since the gold price has been so bad and one of our major exports is now suffering as a result of that. we need this investment income to come into the country and start projects which create jobs. I'm not just talking about money coming into the stock exchange. I'm talking about projects which will produce jobs on an ongoing basis. That's what we desperately need.
Are there affirmative action programs in South Africa, either in education or in the workplace?
Oh, yes, very much so, and in law as well. There is affirmative action going on. In fact, there's a good deal of headhunting going on among the major companies to find black people that they can put into managerial positions. So there is still, of course, a huge disparity between the number of people who are white in managerial and executive positions and those who are black. But there are affirmative action programs, some of which I might say go too far, I think anyway, in trying to force the issue to go so much faster when you don't have the available skills. If you had them, of course, that would be different because you've got to address the grievances of the past and give people opportunities now when they didn't have them in the past years. But you can't force industry into taking unqualified people and still expect to maintain a level of production and competitiveness with other industries at home and abroad. You know, I just don't think, as someone who's had a little training in economics, that that is possible.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we're going to take a short break. And our guest today on Fresh Air is Helen Suzman. She was a member of the South African Parliament from 1953 to 1989. And we are talking about conditions in South Africa today. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Our guest is Helen Suzman, and we're talking about South Africa. She was a member of the South African Parliament from 1953 until 1989. Let's talk a little bit about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. This is being chaired by Bishop Desmond Tutu to investigate human rights violations. How effective do you think those hearings have been in terms of healing the past?
I can't really say that. I'm not very much one who turns the other cheek, you know. I would like to see people who've been perpetrators of really evil crimes in the old apartheid days, I'd like to see them locked up. I really would. I'm not one of the forgiving types, I'm afraid, so it's difficult for me to assess that situation. I've no doubt it works for people who have got nicer, kinder natures than I have. But I tell you, it has been very revealing to millions of white people to know exactly what went on during those days. I might say nothing has surprised me. I knew a good deal during those years because the relatives of missing people or detained people used to come to me and tell me what they knew. And people who had been in detention and were released used to come and tell me how they had been treated. And I used to tell Parliament this. So I do not understand this business of we did not know, which is now the sort of local cry among many people who certainly did know. And if they didn't know, they should have known. Hmm. But I don't know, really. I mean, it certainly has revealed a great deal to people who genuinely didn't know, the ordinary public.
Well, when the former wife of Nelson Mandela, Winnie Madikizela Mandela, testified before the commission, there was a lot of attention in this country. I can only imagine in South Africa
yes,
how much
there was.
Interest.
The hearings were very well attended. I, in fact, attended a couple of them myself. And, well, Winnie behaved with her usual self-confidence, denying everything. And one just doesn't know what evidence will be able to be produced as a result of these hearings. There is talk that there is going to be further prosecution proceedings. So far, nothing has happened. I myself have got quite a lot of sympathy for Winnie Madikizela-Mandela, let me tell you, because I know what she went through during those years. And I visited her several times during her period of 8 years banishment to a little town in the Orange Free State, as it then was, where the whites wouldn't speak to her and the blacks didn't speak the same language, and she was totally isolated. And she lived in a little house without electricity or water and so on. And she had a tough, tough time. And she was harassed by that special branch day and night. She was detained over and over again. She spent 17 months in solitary confinement on one occasion. I don't know how sane one emerges from a situation like that. I know I wouldn't be too good, not too sane anyway, but I can imagine that would have driven me over the top. And Winnie, I mean, whatever act she perpetrated, if she did perpetrate them, and probably it's the evidence may be forthcoming, I think did so being convinced that the people that she was acting against had turned into government informers. And she was fighting a war. She really was fighting a war.
Well, I know you supported her in the first trial. And I wonder, though, the testimony at this Truth and Reconciliation Commission from the parents of the boy, Stumpy, who was murdered by members of this soccer club that had some association with Winnie.
Strong association with Winnie. I'm not denying the possibility of these things at all. All I'm saying is that Winnie Mandela was fighting her own war. And as far as she was concerned, people who'd turned informers had to be eliminated. And that's just the attitude she had. I'm not condoning what she has or may not have done, but I just know what, in fact, motivated her.
If it is found that she was responsible for these murders, what should be her punishment? Should she have amnesty? Should she face imprisonment?
Well, Winnie has refused to ask for amnesty. She has flatly refused to ask for amnesty. So, I mean, then she's prepared to face prosecution. And if she is found guilty, she will go to prison. That will be her punishment.
And is that very much in character?
It is, rather. It is in character. She's a defiant person. She always was. Yes, that is in character.
What kind of...
As I believe it was in character for P.W. Botha to refuse to appear before the commission. You know, he was subpoenaed in the end, and he's now, I think, I mean, there's a sub judice really to talk about this because he hasn't appeared before the court yet, but he has been subpoenaed and prosecuted for refusing to appear before the commission. And that's in character as well. He, I think, would go to prison rather than pay any fine if he's found guilty by the court. And I mean, my prediction is that he'd be in prison just a few days and he would be released on compassionate grounds because he's old and not very well. And he will emerge as the hero of the Afrikaner folk, which, when you come to think of it, is not what was intended. Unintended consequences always interest me.
Yes. What kind of support does Winnie Madikizela Mandela still have in South Africa?
I think she's got a lot of support among the people, for instance, living in the squatter camps, because Winnie is a superb politician. She knows if there's a funeral or if somebody's been injured or there's been a calamity in the family, Winnie's there in a flash, offering solace and comfort to the families that have suffered, and they think she's great. And she's also got a lot of, I think, support among the young people, the young black people who haven't really been able to realize the ambitions they had of a far better life when the new government came in.
How do you think South Africa will fare after Nelson Mandela leaves the presidency? Are you concerned about that at all?
Well, everybody will miss him. Look, he's irreplaceable. Let me say that right away. His own characteristics, his posture, his looks, his smile, his ability to handle people, which is quite remarkable. Young, old, black, white,
he's there.
And he does it very, very well on a personal level. He will be missed. There's no question about it. But we have younger people who've been having a few years' experience now in governance, like the Thabo Mbeki, who's taken over the presidency of the ANC, who's an educated man. He was in exile in England. He took a degree at Sussex University in economics, I believe. And, he's quite an able man. So the country goes on. There's no question about it. And if the economy improves, well, then things, I think, generally speaking, for the people in the camps, squatter camps and so on, will certainly feel a better, higher standard of living.
Since your retirement, how do you spend your days, your time?
Well, you know, talk about a retirement, it's a joke. I'm a part-time commissioner on the Human Rights Commission, which has been established by Parliament, appointed by the President, to keep a watchful eye on human rights in South Africa. And I'm part-time commissioner, and the job becomes more demanding as the years go on, and I'm not sure how much longer I shall be around to do that. So that occupies some of my time. And the rest, I'm on education trusts, which have meetings, and I have two beautiful cats that I'm very fond of, and I have a large dog, and I have many friends, and I keep very busy, actually. I really am busy.
And are you hopeful about the future of South Africa?
That's a good word you've used, because people ask me if I'm optimistic, and I always say I'm hopeful. Huh. And that is exactly the thing. I am hopeful because we have a lot of plus factors. We are not a basket case like so many of the unfortunate African countries are. We've got resources. We've got a very innovative population. We have still got a free press, I'm glad to say, which is very important. And we do have opposition voices in Parliament which are able to express disappointment and disagreement, and we have a few BDIs from outside in the NGOs, lots of them in fact, keeping an eye on what's going on in the country. So I am quite hopeful.
Well, Helen Suzman, I thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
It's been my pleasure.
Helen Suzman was a member of the South African Parliament and a pioneering political leader in the fight against apartheid. She's in the country to receive an award. I'm Artie Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.